This is our league, and this is your league. From the 55-yard line on CFL America Radio and the Sports History Network.
Stand by, 15 seconds to air. Stand by, all cameras and videotape.
Ready with your opening graphics. Stand by, Howard. Here we come, Frank. Ready, Don.
Stand by, audio, your opening music, and roll tape.
Take tape.
It's easy to see why this place has become synonymous with beads, beers, and bachelor parties. Just look around. This isn't Mardi Gras. This is just a Thursday night. But beyond Bourbon Street is the real city. A city with grit. A city full of resilience. A city with one hell of a personality. A city with soul, as my journey begins yet again to explore the NFL cities and the issues important to these communities. We start here at the mouth of the Mississippi River, New Orleans. With each night comes the harsh reminder of morning, a reminder to the men and women who wake up each day to tackle the issues at the heart of this city. That's what I'm here for, to listen, to understand the struggles of what's being done, to make life in New Orleans a little easier. If musician Ivan Neville's last name sounds familiar, it should. Son of legendary artist Aaron Neville, the distinct notes of the New Orleans sound runs through Ivan's veins. The Nevilles are royalty in New Orleans, a town that appreciates trombones as much as touchdowns, and Ivan is a fitting ambassador for my journey in the Big Easy. Ivan and I start here, and naturally, in New Orleans, start with food. Dookie Chase's has been around since the 1940s, serving a menu of soul food favorites. A landmark in the Treme neighborhood, Dookie Chase's has become the meeting place around New Orleans culture, the epicenter of the civil rights movement in the 1960s, and ground zero in today's continuing fight.
I looked it up, read about it, and read about Leah Chase, who sadly passed away in June, I believe. But she used to say, you can solve all the world's problems over her gumbo.
Correct.
I mean, it was literally one of the very few places in the Deep South during the 40s, 50s, and 60s, but certainly in New Orleans, where you could have white and blacks at the same time in the same place without it being a problem.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah. He still got good food, though.
Al Perkins, Carl Connor, and Alana Odoms Hebert are all attorneys in the area and part of the continuing battle for civil liberties and criminal justice reform.
We are still dealing with getting our first set of first-generation college students in. We're still dealing with a large part of our population that have not even achieved a high school degree. That is huge when you look at it, because education really represents what? Opportunities. Mm-hmm. If there's no opportunities, then next thing you know, you start going down a different road. That road normally will have some form of criminal activity. We've lost that person.
Ivan, recently, a good friend of yours was finally released from prison
Yeah. He just got out, like last week. He was not a violent guy, wasn't a violent criminal, anything like that. He dealt with drugs and stuff like that. And he got 20 years. And during this time, I know of people, unfortunately, that have committed far worse crimes, like killing someone, that have gone into jail and have come out. That there's something wrong with that.
We incarcerate folks for more low-level nonviolent offenses than any other place in the country. So whereas something would be considered maybe perhaps even a misdemeanor, a simple possession in another state, that is a felony here in Louisiana. We know what the consequences are of felonies. And we see direct vestiges of Louisiana's position as a slave state with our ports and the top incarceration rates that we have now, and those are all by policy decision. You know, really wanting to make sure that freed slaves did not have the opportunity to have social mobility and kind of gain their actual freedom.
That's right.
So when you really look at the criminal justice system as a form of racial control, which is exactly what it is, you realize how we have to work even harder to try to dismantle it completely.
Wow. The voting rights for formerly incarcerated people, right?
Absolutely.
Demario Davis, the Saints.
Correct.
Players from the Saints helped make that happen, helped that law get passed the next day because they got involved. They wrote that letter, right?
That's correct.
What I would like to see in the future from athletes is that more of them do it not for the sake of, I want to get my brand out
right.
or anything like that, but just speak. And I know it's harder when you're not the star, right?
Right.
It's much harder, right? Because you're trying to do this thing that has a real finite period of time.
Right.
And so there is a lot to lose in it, right?
We have to talk about, like, how do you move people? How
right.
do you inspire? How do you create motivation? How do you get people to say, this really matters?
Right.
When an athlete steps up, especially one that's revered from our community, from the
yes,
Saints,
sir.
And says, mm-hmm. this is important, people listen.
Well, we're solving the world's problems.
We have.
We started, and
it started
with gumbo.
With the gumbo.
Look,
see,
we're not
there's
the first
something
people.
In this gumbo. It's real, y'all.
When one wall deep, all the walls deep. When one line deep, all the lines deep. Yo, so you want to take care of your brother, you got to eat. You eat by making plays. Every throw, every catch, every tackle, every set. That's how you eat. Let's go eat.
Words can motivate, clearly. And words combined with actions is what Saints linebacker Demario Davis is all about. From the second he landed in the Big Easy before the 2018 season, he's been on a mission to use his voice.
All this kind of started with, you know, working with the Players Coalition. And so how that ended up coming together was, it was a lot of guys and players who were working in social justice spaces, whether it was criminal justice reform, whether it was education disparity, whether it was, you know, police accountability and police and community engagement. So it was all these different guys working in all these spaces. And in that time, when we figure out, you know, these are the major issues that's going on, then it's like, okay, so what do we need to do? What are the action items that can start to create solutions immediately? And around that time, they had this bill, I think 636, that was trying to restore voting rights. So this bill had been coming up, trying to get passed, I think, for about 5 years.
Okay.
And it just kept just kind of running into the same wall. And here was, we had an opportunity to shine a light. And we just kind of used our platforms to, you know, tweet about it, talk about it, let people be aware, like, this is what's happening. Now, because they're following the athlete, they see these issues, and a lot of times it changes so fast because people are like, well, let's just do this before too much attention gets on us. You don't want to be on the wrong side of that fence, that bill I'm getting passed,
the next day. You're leveraging your platform to, you know, to make change in things you believe in, and trying to do it the right way. And a lot of times, like you said, you got a couple of players that are very well educated on the matter, understand what's going on. They're not just doing it on a whim. Speak out on that, you know, and literally the next day, things change.
Let's go!
It's the power of collaboration. You know, it's understanding that everybody has a role to play. Even if our role is just using our platforms to amplify other voices, you know, it may not be an idea that I came up with. So it's like, let me do my part and just use my platform to talk about something that somebody's been talking about for years but not being heard. And that's how we create change.
Running more than 2,000 miles long, the Mississippi River once formed the unofficial western border of this country. A trip west meant adventure, prosperity, and progression. Today, it's a short ferry to Federal City, a former naval base and current home to the New Orleans Panthers football team. And it's here I meet Coach Cedric Walker, now in his seventh season with the team. With a felony conviction in his past, Coach Walker looks to make the most of his second chance by turning to football.
Ryan, you thought, don't think, react. Good.
So you obviously inspire a lot of these kids out here. But, I mean, they inspire you too? That's really
yes.
What I'm getting at.
I have a checkered path, and of course, I can go out there. I can do some bonehead things. I can do some knucklehead things. But
we all can.
Right. But why would I do something that's going to let the youth down? That's going to let my organization down? Yeah. I want to hold them accountable, but I got to hold myself accountable first. I have to put myself in a position to be able to show up here every day and impart in them. I can't do that from a jail cell.
Good.
And this team, most of the coaches, similar situations like yourself, right?
Right. I have several coaches who have, you know, unfortunately, did some things in their past and went through the system. But I can tell you this because we always talk, we always get together. This, too, is their rock. It's their strength, just like it's mine. Doing this, it helps you. It propels you. It makes you want to. These kids inspire us, but we also inspire those kids. You know, these kids, it's like a street, you know? And when you're going down a street, there's many side streets. You can always turn left, you can always turn right, but it takes a strong person to keep straight. And so that's what we did in our life. We didn't let convictions, parole, probation, we didn't let none of that stop us from what we wanted to do and helping the youth. Because at the end of the day, this is how we give back.
Appreciate it, brother.
Bro, I appreciate
you. Thank
you
for having me out.
Thank you.
It was really cool.
Hey, y'all welcome anytime.
Now, almost 15 years since Hurricane Katrina destroyed this place, causing an estimated $125 billion in damage, New Orleans is still rebuilding. And it's hard to look around and not see progress.
Hey, my man, what's happening?
What's up, brother?
All right, man.
For 133 years, a more than 16-foot statue of Confederate General Robert E. Lee stood right here. An imposing reminder of our nation's complicated past. For 8 years, Mitch Landrieu served as the mayor of New Orleans, starting in 2010 as the post-Katrina rebuild was still in full effect. Under Landrieu's leadership, the statue that once stood here came down.
And this all went down a couple of years ago, right?
Well, in 2014, I had just gotten reelected, and you know, we had to rebuild the city because we got beat to death from Katrina. So the question was, how are we going to build it back? And the answer was not like it was, but the way it should have been if we would have gotten it right the first time. And part of reconciliation was the African-American community saying, you know, those monuments are really offensive. We don't feel welcome here. And Wynton Marsalis, who we both grew up with, who was our buddy when we were kids, is the one that said, have you ever looked at them from my perspective?
Wow.
Now, this is my friend. He loves me, but he's right. Hit me right in the mouth, right? And I said, no. He goes, well, then he didn't yell at me. He said, well, would you do that for me? Would you give me the honor of looking at it from my perspective? So symbols really matter. And if symbols reflect how you act, that even matters more. So, you know, if we're talking about what America is all about, it ought to really reflect a true patriotism, not just a false patriotism. And that's a hard conversation that we're not really good at having in America, and we're struggling with it right now.
So,
there's no question.
We got to get more comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Yeah, no, that's,
in order to get through that.
We should be all right with that.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, I grew up, and I was a child in the 60s, in the 70s, and I thought things were going positive and getting better, but there was some hidden, you know, there was some hatred that just recently was reawakened.
If you're a young 12-year-old African-American little girl and you stand in front of the statue of Robert E. Lee, and you're thinking about what you're going to do in your future, and you look at that monument, do you think that thing's encouraging you? Or do you think it's telling you, you know, you're not worth it?
Right.
I mean, what we want to do is lift people up. We don't want to push them down.
Who belongs on the top of that thing? What do you really think?
I think it should be maybe dedicated to a few people and just have a big musical note on top of them. And it'd be maybe have a little part where maybe Max over there, have Art Neville over there, Dave Bartholomew, Fats Domino, have a little circle of all of the heroic, iconic New Orleans musicians that are no longer with us.
That's a good idea. That's not a bad idea.
Or a trumpet.
Yeah, right?
Or a trumpet.
It's a trumpet
too. Or a trumpet. Or you can put him up there.
Circle.
You could call it Music Circle. That'd be great.
Jazz has played a vital role in defining the city of New Orleans, but it's also considered the birthplace to a genre of hip-hop called bounce. Next up, time to pay a visit to the self-proclaimed queen of bounce herself, Big Frida.
Big Frida, the queen diva.
You better believe
her. It's Big Frida!
So what's Upturn Arts?
It's an art program that helps different kids find their expressive art inside them and to be able to let them express it in a group setting of kids.
Yeah, and I feel like it's also an outlet for people that, especially young people that may, you know, be heading down a dangerous path.
They need that in school because it helps you to stay out of trouble. It helps you to be busy after school. Like when I was growing up, we did all that. You know, my mom made sure you're going to choir rehearsal, you're going, you know, you got cheerleading practice, you got after school program, you got student council. All those things were important to make me who I am today.
It sounds like you had a very supportive mother.
I did.
You know, I mean, because obviously, you know, you're different. And
I
that
am.
Difference is a good thing,
yeah.
But you're different. And it sounds like from a very young age, like she embraced that and just knew who
she
you were.
She did. She knew who I was and she embraced it and she also protected me. So she also wanted me not to be afraid to go out into the world and show people who I am. And she wanted me to stand strong and stand tall. And if you're gonna do this, she said, be the best queen that you can be.
You talk about encouraging people to find their inner diva.
Oh yeah,
you
know, most definitely.
And young people too.
I mean, all walks of life, young, old, black, white, gay, straight, give people an opportunity to feel free, feel empowerment, feel love on the dance floor without being judged. I have fun to get to see all of that play out all around the world.
Saints players are kind of a big deal around here, and not just the stars. My final stop is to see Steve Gleason, a former Saints player who will always be remembered for a moment. A moment that came when a city destroyed by a hurricane needed it most.
Look out, right through! A kick pop by Steve Gleason! It is scooped and scored by Curtis DeLoach! Touchdown, New Orleans!
But a pump block will be no more than a postscript to the Steve Gleason story. His body is now debilitated by ALS, diagnosed while still a member of the team. Steve's courage has galvanized this community once again.
So Nate, before we get started, here are a couple things to know about how I communicate. If I raise my eyebrows, that means yes. If I blink, that means no. If I wink, that means exactly. Or I think you're really cute. I won't tell you which one though.
That's good. That's perfect. All right, well, I'm gonna take cute every time, so appreciate that. So after Hurricane Katrina, football really galvanized the city. And you not only saw that, you experienced it firsthand. So how today, without a natural disaster like Katrina, is football continuing to bring the city together and really inspire change in the communities?
At any point in this magnificent city's history, I'd bet that the Superdome for Saints games is the most integrated and interracial building in New Orleans. So if we're comparing the ability of football to bring people together from every race, religion, or any other lifestyle choice, I'd say football is the most powerful galvanizing phenomenon.
So obviously it's very important for players to use that platform if they have the opportunity, if it's something that they feel strongly about, to make a difference in the community, especially players in the NFL with the largest platform. How important do you think it is, you know, for all these players to use their voice and do what they can to bring about change for everyone?
Right. I think it's discouraging to hear ordinary people tell football players, or any athletes to, quote unquote, stick to sports. Like any other human who witnesses something wrong, or something unjust, I encourage Saints players, football players, and athletes to use their platform, shining light on those issues of injustice or struggle or strife, is not only necessary, it's remarkably courageous.
Yeah, totally. Your motto, No White Flags, it sends a message of perseverance in the face of obstacles. How does that apply to the various injustices that people are facing in society today?
I think it's important to point out that, in all of human history, there's been no better time to be a human than right now. The average global citizens live better and longer than kings and queens lived a couple centuries ago. In my case, with ALS, if I would have been diagnosed 100 years ago, or even 20 years ago, it would be a certain death sentence. So, I think it's important to take a moment to realize that, from that perspective, we can be grateful to live in the greatest time in all of human history. Having said that, there is still so much that can be done to improve our world. And the only reason things have improved so vastly compared to our past is the relentless work of people trying to improve our human condition. This is exhausting work, like pushing a boulder up a mountain. The No White Flags motto we have certainly applies to all the people who have and continue to do vital work to improve the quality of life for people of all races, nationalities, faiths, and backgrounds. Those are the heroes of human history, and those are today's heroes.